Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral, and as always, we are a video store somewhere in your hometown, so come find us. Yes, video stores still exist. And you're probably wondering, wait, we? But it's just you talking. Yes, this is the royal we. Because, of course, I have the Honorable Tesla and the fantastic Miss Frida in the video store, and it's not only the 500th episode of Cinema Gems, but also Patron's birthday pick. Patron, you're here! Yay! Woo!
I'm here! I'm here! It's happening.
The Phantasmus Frida is up.
Yeah. Oh, she's applauding. Oh, and ear flaps. Thank you guys. Wow. Thank you so much. I'm so honored. Aw, and licks. Licks, paws, ear flaps.
Bleps.
Bleps. That's all we need in life. Oh, some boofs. Yeah. I love a little pup boof.
So, do you want to talk about how significant not only this 500 episode is, but the significance of your pick? Because not only is it your birthday pick, but it's also the 500th episode. So, I didn't finagle the rules. The Honorable Tesla put the motion to, you know, set, and the Phantasmus Frida put a second to it, so it was ushered. Technically, this is the 31st anniversary of The Jungle Book.
Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book.
Excuse me.
That's what the title says when it pops up.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
It says.
Excuse me.
Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Book, also known as The Jungle Book from 1994. Thank you very much.
Okay. So we're both right.
Yes. Okay. Technically, we are both right.
Okay. So a little background about this for our listeners. I have been asking the Admiral to find this film for me.
We found it at an estate sale for a VHS and the Admiral Tesla.
We found it at the Goodwill.
The Goodwill, yes. Goodwill.
We found two, not one, but two VHS copies of
Phantasmus Frida re-engineered it. They did some weird mumbo-jumbo kind of way where they made it from VHS to digital. I don't know how. I don't know. Ask.
I don't know.
They act. They did it. I know. I don't know. Ask.
So
they did it.
It was a communal effort. Thank you, everyone, for helping in the efforts of finding this film for me. I have been searching high and low, and I almost thought it was a fever dream, like a Mandela effect almost. Like, did this film even exist for me? So when was the first time we watched it together? Probably
about
four
months ago.
That's it? Wait. No, that's probably almost a little less than a year ago, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So we watched this.
Oh, by the way, for those who are listening, we pause randomly and it is playing on in the background.
Yes.
On mute.
Yes, because I can't get enough of this film. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. So, this film, I grew up watching. I also had it on VHS. RIP to Patron's VHS collection because of Hurricane Katrina. But I
20 years ago.
Wow, 20 years ago this year. I watched this film constantly. I believe it was on Disney for a little bit, and then
it played on Disney Channel?
I think it played maybe once, and then I somehow collected a VHS copy and just was one of those kids that just had to put it on over and over again. Yes, I grew up watching this film, and when we were rewatching it, realizing maybe I should not have been watching this film at such a young age. It's pretty violent, actually. But if, you know, thinking back on it,
it was the 90s.
Exactly. You had what? The Dark Crystal. We had.
That was the 80s.
Oh, whatever.
But I'm talking, we had Animaniacs. We had Rocko's Modern Life. We had Ren and Stimpy.
We had violence around us a lot. I'm surprised we're not more violent. So, see.
I mean, that's why the world is how it
is
now.
Oh, no, don't say that. Look, but we came out okay. So, anyways, so back to this film.
With some therapy.
So, this film. Exactly. So, this film isn't your typical Jungle Book animated film.
So I want to preface this by saying one thing completely. This is my favorite adaptation of The Jungle Book.
As is mine. For nostalgic reasons, one, but also it's so much more in depth, and there's a lot of action to it, and there's a lot of, you know, there's action and romance and horror.
It's kind of a 1920s bombastic, heroic, like almost movie of the week, kind of.
Okay.
Like, yeah. It's very almost in a way of like, this week in the world.
Oh.
And then they play, this would be the feature film that's after that.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Oh, and we get to the Room of Death in this movie.
Yeah. So, this film.
So, I don't really like the original 1969 adaptation of The Jungle Book, or 1967.
I love the music, though. The music is wonderful.
The music is good. I know Dr. Strangepork. That's his favorite. It's his favorite one.
Aww.
And I also watched the remake of this one in 2017. The one, Jon Favreau's.
That's the remake of the animation.
Right.
The animated one.
Where you have, for some reason, the only thing I remember from that movie is Scarlett Johansson was a snake.
Oh, the only thing I remember was the King Louie.
Oh, was Christopher Walken?
Yeah.
And he had the cowbell?
Yeah, that's all I remember. That's literally all I remember from that film.
Oh, and I guess you got Bill Murray as Baloo.
I don't even remember that. So anyway, so clearly that one was the one jump.
So technically this is the first live action remake that Disney produced.
And you know what? I should probably read the book as well, because I'm so curious to see how well or not well they adapted the film to the book.
According to Wikipedia, you know, we all know how Wikipedia can be, you know, really weird. This is takes the plot line from the second book mostly.
Oh, okay.
So it is,
which that would make sense, because in the first novel, I feel like it's about Mowgli being a child in the jungle.
Correct.
Yes, so that makes sense. This would be,
by the
because
way,
this is Mowgli as an adult, and he tries to come back into the
society,
world, into society, and into this colonized version of India.
Oh,
and and so he, so we do see a different storyline. But again,
a fish out of water.
I love
and
it.
Brought back into water. Because technically, the film opens where he is a.
He's a child.
Yes. And his father was kind of like this guide for Sam Neill's character. Which, by the way, Sam Neill plays a British person in this movie.
He's Australian, right?
New Zealand.
Oh,
there's a difference.
I'm so sorry to the New Zealand.
We know Sam Neill listens because he does follow me on Twitter.
Oh, yes. That's
just saying.
And. Well, sorry, real quick, before we get into that, do you want to talk about this amazing cast that they have?
Let's start off with Carrie Elwes. Carrie Elwes.
Oh, that's who you're going to start off with.
Carrie Elwes.
I was going to save him for last.
No, Sam Neill's last.
Oh, so sorry.
Carrie Elwes.
Okay.
Who is stupendous, bombastic.
As the villain.
A very macho, almost very similar to just a heroic.
Heroic.
I use heroic in a quote unquote kind of racist British way.
What? I don't know. I'd find a different term than heroic. But anyways, so he plays the villain. He plays the narcissistic, toxic white man who.
That's probably more accurate.
Exactly. Yeah. So anti-hero.
Yeah.
The villain. So anyways.
Antagonist.
So, anyways, he does a fantastic, phenomenal job.
But he does
job.
Wear some amazing suits.
And his mustache.
His mustache has racism.
His mustache is the second best mustache in this film.
We'll save the first one for later.
So, but man, because, you know, we're used to seeing him in The Princess Bride, and he plays villains so well. Maybe a little too well. But,
I mean, he also is in Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yes. So, but briefly, I just wanted an anecdote about the time that we met Carrie Elwes together at the con. and you got him to sign the book, his memoir, and we took a picture with him. And the what a beautiful thing that he did was that I mentioned how much I love this film. And I feel like he doesn't get that as much anymore. So, and he had a picture of himself from this film. And I told him how much I loved that film. And he was so genuine and sweet that he signed a copy for me and gave it to me for free. And I mean, we did pay for everything else, but it was so wonderful, that little addition. And he's just my favorite celebrity to have met always. So he's wonderful.
Oh, and he did. I did have my satchel that I had because we were.
Oh, he liked your pins, didn't he?
No, he specifically liked my favorite Muppet, which was Sam the Eagle.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were.
Speaking of Sam.
Sam Neill?
Yeah, Sam Neill. Sam Neill's in this too.
The best mustache?
The best mustache.
The kind of least racist mustache?
The second least racist mustache.
He's less racist mustache than Carrie Elwes's mustache.
Yes, but the least racist mustache is John Cleese.
Maybe.
He plays a doctor.
We were talking about Sam Neill.
I'm sorry.
So Sam Neill, you may know Sam Neill, obviously, from Jurassic Park.
What?
Obviously. We don't want to get sued. Please.
Oh, sorry.
We don't want to get sued. But he's also in The Hunt for Red October, The Piano, Into the Mouth of Madness, which we should be reviewing this year, technically. No, wait. Nope. No, it came out the same year as Jungle Book, Into the Mouth of Madness.
Wow, he did both of those films?
Yes.
Death
in Brunswick, which is an amazing... I believe Australian or New Zealand film. I don't know exactly which one. Bicentennial Man, The Dish, Event Horizon.
Are you going to name all his films?
Of course we are. And also Dead Calm, another really good movie, I highly suggest. Ace of Spies.
I think
Under the Mountain. Another good fantasy movie.
I think the listeners know who Sam Neill is.
Hunt for the Wilder People?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great. I will give you that. I think that's enough.
Okay.
List. I think everyone gets the idea of who Sam Neill is.
They're probably like, wow, we're going down the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, he plays the father of none other than Cersei Lannister.
Yeah.
Lena Headey. Headey?
Well, I'm not British, so I don't know how to say it properly.
Headey.
Which, by the way, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we reviewed Batman Begins, and that had a little baby Joffrey.
Oh, yes, I remember
that. So it's nice that we're reviewing a couple weeks later a baby Cersei.
Yeah. And then, of course,
she actually plays a character that I kind of like, but also don't really hate as much as Cersei.
This one? Wait, who? This film?
Lena Headey.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of the few roles I actually like her in.
I think she's great. I think she's underutilized. So, and of course, she's the only main female.
This is not past the Bechdel test.
No, definitely.
Wait, no. Technically, it does. What does that bridge do? Oh, that bridge
that
says.
That wasn't.
Those are two other women, though.
That wasn't more than 5 minutes, though. I forgot what the timeline is.
No, it's three lines. It has to be three lines, and it can't be about the main character.
Wow, are you mansplaining?
Nope. I'm just letting you know that technically. It passes.
You heard it here, folks.
The Bechdel test.
On my birthday. On the day of my birth. On the 500th episode.
It technically...
I'm just messing with you, Admiral.
It technically passes the Bechdel test.
Yes. You passed the Bechdel test.
I personally did. I think the movie did, technically. Well, that's a good shot.
I know.
Between the roses.
Speaking of great... Oh, wait. Okay, we also have to talk about Jason Scott Lee. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Who is apparently... That was... Stephen Sommers' first choice to play Mowgli. And Disney was like, nah, he's too old.
Wow. But he's got the bod.
He was very insistent that he has to be him.
Wow. I love that. Speaking of, we love Stephen Sommers. And it explains so much why I love this film. Because he also was the director of The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. So that makes... so much sense, and my childhood makes so much sense now.
You have a good taste.
I do. I have Stephen Sommers' taste.
Do you want to talk about John Cleese?
You can.
John Cleese is phenomenal in every role that he's in. And this one it's his comedy that makes his character so perfect.
And it's good for the, and because this film is so dark and needs a little bit of lightheartedness, which he brings.
Yeah.
And you know, and Jason Scott Lee as Mowgli, with the animals too, like that's also, cause he still kind of has that childlike wonder. So I feel like they're a good balance, especially in the little, you know, somewhat controversial scenes of him like training him and speaking English again. So
a different perspective, that can seem very offensive and very imperialistic.
Right. Exactly.
For a white man.
Right.
To teach a.
So as a child, it was, you know, that's something funny.
Right.
So that was something funny to watch, and of course, the maestro.
Oh, the Butt Maestro.
Butt Maestro, we'll talk about a little bit.
Oh, wait, since we said his name, Butt Maestro.
Oh, he's been summoned. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Where is he?
Hey, y'all, it's the Butt Maestro here, and the Admiral and Patron specifically requested that I pop into a little bit of this review to drop a little bit of a blurb and my thoughts here for Patron's birthday pick. Happy birthday, Patron. This was an interesting pick. I haven't seen this movie since I was a little kid. And I remember certain very specific aspects of it, mainly the sand, the quicksand. While watching this movie the other day, made myself a little bit of a list that I titled "In Case the Admiral and Patron Didn't Get to It," parentheses, because I won't know until after the episode is released. So here's my list. I'm going to try to run through it as quick as I can. First off, John Cleese, just being John Cleese. He's really just Basil Fawlty throughout the whole movie. His first lines in the movie are just exactly the kind of goofy shtick you expect from the Monty Python alum. He's amazing. Second, Jason Scott Lee does so much with so little dialogue in this movie. And he's incredible. His physical acting, his ability to convey so much on his face and body language is incredible. And I think it's a very good kind of 101 for kids of like, hey, animals express language differently than humans. It's a good place to start. My third note, this is a kid's movie with a question mark. The child actors in the beginning are very silly and are kind of offset by the very serious adult actors around them, reacting to a lot of dark stuff, which brings me to my next note. Wow, this is a really dark kid's movie and people are dying pretty gruesome deaths. Wow, the tonal shift from one scene to another is actually pretty jarring if you're not ready for it. My next note, Cary Elwes effortlessly playing a very punchable scumbag. In case you didn't know, this is not the Mowgli growing up in the jungle, limited lens that we see in the animated and the new CGI one. This is really the impacts of colonial imperialism on a people, on a culture. And Cary Elwes, I think, performs incredible as an extension of colonial imperialism, the real villain of this movie. He's just the face of that, and he plays it incredibly well. My next note, I wish Cersei Lannister, Lena Headey, had more to do in this movie other than being a damsel in distress and kind of a white savior. She's kind of 50-50. My next note, at a certain point, the movie's plot is impossible to tell apart from Tarzan. Like I said before, a lot of colonial imperialism in this movie, and some of that is in the place of Mowgli being taught English from scratch by these white people, which is equal parts endearing and cringy. And my last note, Basil Poldoris' music is perfect as always. You know this composer from The Hunt for Red October. And I know him, of course, best from Starship Troopers, his work on that. His work on this is amazing. And it comes at a time in the 90s where a lot of movies were scored by synths. And there's not anything necessarily wrong with that. But this was, I think, a breath of fresh air and a great change of pace. And Basil Poldoris doing what he usually does and matching the tone of the movie. If the movie has a grand epic scale, he's going to match that. I think he absolutely does. This is a solid 3/4 of a gem for me. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know if I would show it to little kids. Maybe your more mature kids. if they ask for it, if they want it, if they seem really bored with the animated one or the newest one. I like this a lot. Good pick, Patron, and happy birthday. Thank y'all for having me on. I'll see y'all later. Love all y'all.
Thanks, Butt Maestro.
He's like, wow, took the words right out of my mouth. So that's exactly as I was watching. It's like, oh, yeah, now Tarzan seems so familiar.
By the way, I love that the Butt Maestro has Beetlejuice powers.
I know. Wow, when did that happen? That's great. I love that for you. I love that for you, Butt Maestro.
I guess that's his nature when he's not in the episode. His name has to be summoned by saying his name three times.
That's beautiful. And so I agree wholeheartedly about the Tarzan, because that's exactly what was going through my brain, because I love Tarzan. I love that film. That's one of my favorite, probably top 10 animated Disney films. And when you know, when you have that part of the teaching of him teaching, being taught English, you're like, oh, just throw in some Phil Collins. Bam, you got Tarzan.
And we just got to the part where they shot Baloo.
Guys, see, this is so dark. You're so right, Maestro.
Which you specified that you didn't realize that you never saw this scene as a child, because
I know.
Because we were watching it like maybe like 6 to 8 months ago, and you legit thought that he died. Like,
yeah.
Because you never saw this scene.
Yeah.
But spoiler alert to a 31-year-old movie, Jean Cleese revives him.
Yeah. With his white savior powers.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like some elixir, you know.
Oh, this is such a sad part. Yes, anyways. A toast to Baloo.
A toast to Baloo. And soon his resurrection.
And look at Jason Scott Lee. I agree also with the Maestro of how just his facial expressions are so incredible. So good job, Stephen Sommers. You knew what you were doing. So,
do you want to specify to the listeners which character we think the dogs are in this movie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I think they know.
The Honorable Tesla is Bagheera.
Absolutely.
The Jaguar, the Panther?
He's a Panther, a Black Panther. And then Frida, of course, is. Oh, my God. This means Frida gets shot. What the hell?
Frida's Baloo. Well, only because of one scene where Baloo gets
his little head stuck, yeah. And we just get picture Frida.
But also, the Phantasmus Frida does kind of sit up sometimes and move like Baloo does.
Yeah,
because she's chunk.
She sits like people. She thinks she's people. Yeah. So, can I talk about?
I know it's your birthday pick, uh-huh. But I still wasn't done talking about John Cleese.
Wow. Wow, I know, we're only just at the, because it's just an amazing cast.
Yeah. It's stupendous. And also, like the Buttmeister said, the music, stupendous, phenomenal, amazing. Basil is stupendous. Basil Ponodoros, I probably butchered that name horribly. But the Buttmeister gave him praise, and that's all that really matters, is because that's what the Buttmeister is known for, the music.
I thought you were talking about John Cleese.
One of my favorite characters he's ever done is Basil Fawlty from Fawlty Towers. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about the animals for a little bit, if you don't mind.
Wow. Let me talk about John Cleese. Now let me talk about the animals. But yeah, let's
talk about the animals. So there were 50 tigers.
What?
And 14 purebred wolves used for this movie.
That's a lot of... Sorry.
Well, it's your birthday, so it's fun.
I get one. I get the one F-bomb. Because it is. That's a lot of tigers. Rawr.
And there are... The only animal that is not a real one is Kai? Yeah.
That's a snake.
That's the only one that's not real.
I mean, that makes sense. Where are they going to find a giant... like evil snake?
I mean, there's one currently in a house somewhere
in Florida.
Well, I mean, on the weekends, yeah.
Oh man, but you know what, can we also talk about the CGI of the animals too? Like, even though this was filmed in the 90s, they actually do an incredible job with the CGI, and you know, having, especially with the little kids being next to the crazy animals, CGI animals. Yes.
There's no really CGI animals.
But I mean, the CGI in the sense of, you know, placing the animals next to the actors. That's what I mean.
Okay.
So even though they are filmed animals, but the splicing and the editing, I should say.
Oh, they did like the Back to the Future 2 where you had Biff on the same one.
Right. So because the one that's the most obvious is King Louie. So because so good. Probably
that's my King Louie impression.
That was really good. That was really good, Admiral. And so because Jason Scott Lee isn't actually with all those monkeys around him. You know,
he might not be with all of them. He might be only with a few, and they composited over.
That's true.
Like
so,
different with film.
Which obviously, as adults and we're older, like we can tell. But as kids, like it's actually pretty. It was pretty freaking cool.
The film employed 40 trainers.
Wow.
17 animal companies, and used approximately 150 animals.
Wow.
That's a lot of animals.
That's a lot of poop.
That is a lot of poop. For safety reasons, blue screen was used for moments for the actors when they faced the big cat.
Well,
but everything else I think was done realistically, because in some scenes you can see that the bear is a man in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think every scene.
And also Jason Scott Lee, there was a scene where he was, it was only facing the back, so it could have been an animal trainer.
It could.
Yeah, as the stunt double that was actually wrestling a real bear. So that was my take on that.
Oh, so. And during the scenes included Shere Khan. That's the giant tiger, right?
Shere Khan, yeah.
The set was cleaned of non-essential personnel, so it was probably just Stephen Sommers and the trainers.
Wow.
And
Jason Scott Lee, probably.
Probably for some scenes.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, the Monkey City proved to be quite difficult to film.
Because of poop?
It was extremely hot in India where the films were fiend.
The films were seened.
The flames on the ledge toward the end of the movie routinely caused the ambient temperature to reach 137 degrees.
I can imagine. Wow.
And also, this is filmed in India. It took about 6 weeks.
Amazing.
And
this would be 100% tariff to this during these times.
Well, yeah, no, technically it wouldn't be 100% because if you break it down, it was filmed in India.
100% tariff.
But it was edited in California.
Okay.
But so they filmed 6 weeks. And also I love that they actually do the occupation of India correctly. Like, this is supposed to be like the 1800s when the book is set. But the occupation, do you know when the exact occupation of Britain over India rule was?
No, tell me, Admiral, when was it?
1858 to 1947.
I knew it was pretty recent.
That is 91 years.
Yeah.
That is sad.
Yeah.
Sad in general, but sad that it spilled over into the 20th century.
Yep.
So, guys, sorry, 25 minutes in. So
because this film has so much to offer.
We also want to specify that I love the outfits. They might be racist, but I love the pith hats. But I don't know if I like the regular one that John Cleese wears or the other, like, I don't know if I like the other one that Cary Elwes wears, because it's also, it's the guy, it's the hunter from Jumanji. It's the same style of hat. I don't like that one because it seems very aggressive. I feel like the John Cleese one is more simple. I feel like I have a hat somewhere in the studio.
And if you don't, we'll find you one.
But yeah, they got mutton chops. They got mustaches.
So shout out to the hair and makeup and costumes for this as well.
Because it's incredible. Accurate for the time period. Very accurate. Like I said, this movie is my favorite adaptation of The Jungle Book. Even though technically it's the second book, not the first one. And the prequel, the second one to this one, the sequel to this one was actually a prequel.
Oh, interesting.
So that's why it's called, that's why that movie is specifically called.
Is that one Mowgli's Story?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't believe I've ever seen that one.
It came out in 1998.
Okay. I remember like seeing ads for it, but I don't actually remember.
Well, Disney, it was a bunch of controversy with Disney because they released this under Buena Vista Pictures.
Okay.
They didn't really release it under Walt Disney. Later in the life of this film, they rearranged it to Walt Disney Pictures, but they technically gave half the funding to this, and the other one was it's independent. Technically, it's an independent movie.
Wow.
So the other one, when the second one came out, Disney didn't really want to do anything with it. Mm-hmm. So actually, I think it's Sony Pictures actually did most of the heavy lifting. So that's why you don't really see it promoted on Disney's like platforms or anything, which by the way, I don't know why this isn't on Disney Plus.
It hasn't even, I really don't, I've never seen this in a DVD form. I know you said it exists, but I have physically never seen it in a DVD form. So, and it's never been re-released. It's just one of those that were lost in the ether. And thank goodness the Honorable Tesla and the Fantastic Miss Frida found it for me. So, still forever grateful.
And for anybody wondering, how did they do it? We don't really ask questions. When they go into the Cinecave, we're assuming that it's bigger on the inside, transcendental. And the Honorable Tesla does come out randomly we're at
the quicksand! This is for you, Admiral. Oh, I mean, sorry, not
I'm
Admiral.
Right here.
Sorry, this is for you, but Maestro. This is very. I guess I want to segue real quick into how this is one of the quintessential scenes that you remember as a kid. You're like, oh my god, we're gonna have this problem with quicksand our entire freaking lives. Like we have to know how to get out of quicksand because it's gonna be around every corner. This just feels like, you know,
that's really wet to be quicksand.
Our little millennial's brain that we're going to die in quicksand.
Elder millennial.
Thank you, elder millennial. So I want to talk about the scene that I remember the most. What, speaking of terrible deaths, there's a scene where a gentleman literally gets buried alive with sand. And it's crazy how he gets trapped in there. But that is engraved in my brain of how he is just buried alive.
With the quicksand ingrained?
So, the quicksand wasn't ingrained in my brain, but for some reason, the other sand, the just buried alive sand, was even worse than this one.
Oh. And, so, before that, we were talking about how the Honorable Tesla and Fantastic Miss Frida. So, we have seen the Honorable Tesla wear his, I guess, steampunk goggles.
Okay.
That he wears. He also comes out with a leather apron.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And the Fantastic Miss Frida is always wearing not a sack, but more like a white tunic. So I feel like she's his assistant.
Oh, okay. Do you think they helped with the filming of this movie?
I mean, whenever me and the Bub Maestro record, we do sound like we're in the same room, so possibly they use time travel.
Okay.
Oh, I like how the Honorable Tesla is groaning. Like, yes, I am here. Guys, please check out this movie. It is worth it if you can find a copy. And also, I'm going to do the thing that the Bub Maestro hates. This was released on Christmas Day, December 25th, 1994.
Aw, I love that.
It is 111 minutes, just shy of 2 hours, which, to be honest with you, it's the perfect runtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perfect runtime. The budget was $30 million. Oh, I'm sorry, Honorable Tesla. I need to pet him while I'm doing this. The budget was $30 million, and the box office was $70 million. In the early 90s, the mid-90s, whew,
I didn't even know this had a theater release, so that's incredible.
It has been forgotten.
Aww,
but
it has.
It has a cult following.
Oh. I need to follow this cult. That's a cult I want to join.
The live-action 1994 Jungle Book cult?
Absolutely.
But also,
do you not?
I mean, there are other cults that I would love to follow.
Oh, my God. Anyway, sorry.
Like the John Carpenter cult?
Sorry.
Let's go.
Sorry, I asked. I believe ear flaps. I believe the Honorable Tesla wanted you to pet him as soon as he saw Mowgli petting the elephant.
Probably. And what was the other thing I wanted to say? Oh, By the way, so before, okay, I understand. What was the other thing? Oh, and there's a song, Two Different Worlds. You know who Kenny Loggins is, right?
Sounds familiar.
I'm all right.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same guy.
That's so funny.
It's the same artist.
Wow.
I only know that.
Oh, my God, you mean that's the same guy?
Yeah. That is. So this has a 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
As it should. I still believe it should be higher, but that's really, really good.
About a 6.5 out of 10 stars on IMDb.
I'd go higher.
But Roger Ebert said that it has a little connection to Rudyard Kipling and the classic book and the title expansion. Like, Roger Ebert, the film critic, liked this movie.
Does he normally not?
Not saying he doesn't, but like you go back and you look at some films and you're like, whoa.
I honestly don't like listening to critics a lot. Funny, like being on a...
I was like being
on a movie review podcast. Only because, you know, this is fun. It's so lighthearted. But, you know, some people just take films a little too seriously. And you don't have to. Like, it can be something lighthearted and fun. And, you know, if other people love it, you know, don't yuck someone's yum. Like, some people... Films are for everybody, so that's why I never take movie critics too seriously, you know? I mean, take us seriously. Just right. Kidding.
So, Casey, male black bear was the name who played Baloo.
Oh, Casey, and you did such a great job. You're probably not alive anymore.
Shadow played Bagheera.
Oh, good job, Shadow.
And a female wolf named Shannon was chosen to play Gray Brother.
That's such an odd... I don't know why human names on animals is so funny to me.
This feels like that would be this scene right here where he falls off the cliff.
So like... I always confuse this scene with Indiana Jones.
I mean, they both have British occupation in India, and
yeah,
the scene is kind of similar.
It is a little similar.
And also, Bombay was the male tiger who played Shere Khan. And
good job, Bombay.
A male orangutan named Lowell, L-O-W-E-L-L.
L-O-W-E. Lowell?
Yep. Me? Played King Louis.
Aw. Oh, cool. Their names are very close. Wow.
Louis was the only...
Full gem for all of those animals. Let's give it up for them.
Yay! The animal professor is going a fist bump with his paw. And Lowell was the only animal to play his character all the way through.
Wow. Give Lowell the Oscar. The animal Oscar.
All right. So, here on Cinema Gems, we have a rating system. Full gem, an amazing movie. Half gem, an all right movie. No gem, a horrible movie. The Honorable Tesla wants me to go first. So I am going to rate Jungle Book from 1994, the 31st anniversary, the 500th episode of Cinema Gems, and also your birthday pick. I give this a lost full gem.
A lost full gem.
Yeah. Like you're walking around in the woods and you find something. You're like, whoa, what's this DVD? You open it up, you open the case. It's a scuffed up full gem. I thoroughly love this movie. It is a movie that I feel like should be talked about more. It feels like a movie that should be discussed more. And also, put the bullet in the gun, man. Put the bullet in the gun, bro.
I think this is where my anxiety started.
The bullet in the gun? I thoroughly love this movie very much. It is an amazing movie, and it, like I said before, it is my favorite adaptation of the Jungle Book franchise.
That was beautiful, Admiral. Thank you so much. Well, as it was my pick, and you know how sometimes there's those films that you've seen as a child,
the nostalgia glasses,
and you go, wow, this movie was not as good as I remembered. This is the opposite feeling. This is everything my childhood remembered and more. And it's something you can just appreciate so much more as an adult as well. So, highly recommend. This is my, if I could give my birth year as gems, it would be 33 gems. 33 full gems.
So I think that's the scene where you were talking about where they
splice it. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, the kitty just wants to play.
Good job, Bombay. So, or one of the 19 tigers that
I think it was 15.
Oh, sorry, 15 tigers. Well, guys, thank you so much. This is really fun, like, having it in the background as well. It was almost like you were watching it with us.
Oh, the Honorable Tesla's patting my hand. He's patting my hand to let me know that this is where the insert for my speech is going to come in.
Oh, okay. Let's do it.
Wow. 500 episodes. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I didn't think I'd make it this far. 499 episodes ago, almost 10 years of doing this show, I really was unaware of the longevity of this podcast. I've been through 3 co-hosts and the past, I think, 5 years. 5-6 years, I've had the But My Show, and I am so gracious of all, I wouldn't say torture, but the kind of mess I make him watch. Like, it's very small. Like, let's say the Super Mario Brothers, let's say, which is probably going to come out in a couple of weeks, Judge Dredd, spoilers for the new episode that's dropping. And also, probably Cat in the Hat. That's probably one of the worst movies I ever made him watch, besides The Incredible Melting Man. And we have a few ones coming up this year. Megaforce, I know neither of us like that. Mac and Me. Oh, man, all the months that we came up with during COVID of, like, Box Office Bomb Month, Michael Keaton Month. Well, that was planned before COVID. But it still happened. Like, I'm telling you guys, please go back. It would mean, if you are new to the show, thank you for listening to our 500th episode. I implore you to go back on the website, lowrainpictures.com, on the Cinema Gems tab. Go all the way back to, like, I think it's episode 300? 200? Is it 200? God, that's like 5 years ago, so it probably had to be that. Yep, 300 and around 350 was, wow. Just going through all this, guys, wow. Just please check out our show. Like, we were unaware that it was going to be this long for a long time. We did not know we were going to be not good, but you know what I mean. Like, we weren't going to be going on this long. But I would say Michael Keaton Month and the 200th-ish episode? Right around. Let's see. Oh, there's yep, there it is. 261, Batman. 262, Johnny Dangerously, which was a really good one. Multiplicity. Mr. Mom and Beetlejuice. Michael Keaton Month is probably one of my favorites, guys. Like, I want you guys, y'all, to email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com, and let us know what your favorite episode is from the past 500 episodes. Look, I'm letting you know right now, don't go any farther than, like, around when the Butt Maestro came on. That's good to place a start, but we really hit our stride during lockdown/COVID because we were able to actually worry about our art and come up with ideas for new, fresh ideas. And I think ever since then, we've been really crisp and fresh. Now, granted, I know there are millions of thousands of other podcasts that are very similar, but I know it's going to be really cheesy, but I feel like ours is one of the more indie, stranger, weird, cooler ones, and the reason is because you guys, like, the engagement that we get back, especially when the Butt Maestro tells me he runs into people at Swapper Jacks, our Swapper Jacks coworkers let us know, hey, we'd like you to review this episode. Oh, hey, we'd want you to review this episode. Even, like, random people when I'm, well, not completely random people. It started off as random people, and now it's grown. But still, I would definitely say, please email us and let us know what your favorite podcast episodes are. We want to know. Like, we legit want to know. And also, Marty, thank you so much for letting us be on your website for 500 episodes. Guys, in a couple of months, we're going to go on our 10th anniversary, and we have a very special episode that we're going to review. No, it's not a clip show. We do not like clip shows. The Bub Maestro and I hate clip shows. We will not do a clip show. I'm not saying ever, but we will not do a clip show for the 500th. This is the 500th episode for the 10-year anniversary. Guys, we have a very special movie, and it's a Disney movie from 95. It's the 30th anniversary, so I think that kind of narrows it down. I would like anyone that has an idea of what the movie is, or if they guess it properly, or if they, hey, why don't you do this? Please email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com. We're not joking. We love listener engagement. Please let us know, guys. I've been talking way too long. All I want to say is thanks to Bub Maestro. Thanks, Patron. Thank you, GLaDOS. Thank you, Dr. Almont Kringle. Thank you, everyone that has come on. Thank you for listening. Thank you for engaging. Thank you for letting us know what you like, what you don't like. One of my favorite comments I've ever gotten from a listener is in Swapper Jacks, and they respond, I like that y'all don't BS around. Y'all just tell us the y'all point of view, and y'all keep it short and sweet. That is, thank you. We want little things like that. But guys, I'm going on about to be 7 minutes of talking right now. Back to the 500th episode for Patron's birthday. By the way, happy birthday, Patron. Also, guys, the Honorable Tesla and the Fantastic Miss Frida have been here. They are taking their little nap because we went on a walk and it's kind of hot, so they're taking a little nap. But guys, just thank you so much for everything. Thank you for 500 episodes. And this will be kind of another, I guess, Admiral takes the mic inside the recording booth and records himself for 17 minutes. No, just kidding, 7 minutes. For the 500, not 500, this is a 500 episode. I'm getting confused because I am so ecstatic. I didn't know we were going to reach 500 episodes. For the 10th anniversary. Thank you guys so much for everything. Like, I know it's cheesy, but we really don't do this show. We kind of do this show for me and the Bub Maestro, but we also love to have people, even if it's one or two listeners, that listen to the episode and let us know. That's all we want to know. What do you like that's going on? What do you like? What do you dislike? What do you think we didn't do right? Please email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com. Guys, I am so sorry that I'm talking on for this long, but just thanks for everything, guys, and wipe your hooves and see you later. Back to your regularly scheduled program.
Thank you, Honorable Tesla. Thank you.
Well, Admiral, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this is an honor and a pleasure to have my birthday pick as the 500th episode.
I also think that Honorable Tesla wants you to pet him.
I shall.
All right, guys. So you know the spiel. Let me just take the mic. Literally move the mic over. Guys, it's 500 episodes. You can get all 500 episodes on LowRainPictures.com. Thank you, Marty and the Eric Deserber, for allowing us to be on your website for 500 episodes. And also, guys, please go over to Your 30 and give them some love. They deserve it because they are way far superior than we are. And also, Kevin George, thank you for letting us use your music. Guys, if you can watch this movie, please check it out. It is stupendous, phenomenal, and also a scuffed up full gem.
Go to your local Goodwill. Maybe they have two copies there of VHS. Who knows?
I know the one in Central Florida not far away from, I think, the Winter Park location has one. But guys, look.
We left one there.
Yeah. We did. I should have bought it and just put it in a free library and kept moving it around as I bike.
You would have had to put in a VHS player too, though. So.
Possibly. Anywho. Guys, please check this movie out. And also, remember to take time for yourself before you can help others. It's okay to breathe. It's okay to think about what the other person is thinking before you say anything. As the But Maestro likes to say, I think this is... Well, wait. Technically, we're going around. He technically said this a couple episodes from now. But I'm giving him credit, so it's okay. So we're time traveling. The But Maestro has stated clearly before in the timeline for me, not the show, that you have more in common with a homeless person than you do a millionaire. And I really think that that's true. So guys, just think before, you know, anything happens, and also relax, breathe. And also guys, remember, Black lives always matter, guys. Bye guys. We'll see you later. And also guys, remember that you love The Jungle Book from 1994.
Oh yes. If your takeaway from this will be that Patron absolutely loves Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Book.
What about Zebra?
And Zebra.
All right, guys. See you later. Bye.
Bye.